to introduce the first or the second speaker of this panel, Anne Blieber or Blieber? Blieber, sorry, I should have asked before. So both actually have asked me not to expand on their little bio, but I'll just say a few words. Anne is currently the Executive Director of the International Human Rights Internship Program, which is based in Washington, D.C. She has worked in the human rights field for the good part of the last 30 years. She was a board member of Amnesty International USA. She's worked on organizational development. And most recently, and I think this is what she's going to talk to us about, human rights budget work as a tool for monitoring the realization of economic and social rights. So it's our great pleasure to welcome Anne, and 15 minutes, Anne.
I really want to thank the organizers of the conference for making this opportunity available. I confessed to my son a year ago that after a lifetime of trying to be cool, I have become a nerd because I'm so excited about government budgets, and I'm always happy to talk about government budgets and human rights. So here I am, being a nerd. So, yes, and the reason why I get excited is because a government's budget is about its people's human rights. And just to give just very simple examples, the national government in country F, and I can even put almost any country name in there, it really doesn't matter, directs funds annually to state governments in the country for the establishment and maintenance of a system of emergency food supplies. Local authorities in one state, River State, pocket most of the funds, with the result that emergency food supplies are inadequate when a drought hits the state and people go hungry. That is people's right to food, and what the government has done has been a failure to use the maximum of its available resources to realize people's right to food. Agnes talked about the obligation to fulfill, and under Article 2 of the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, a government is supposed to use the maximum of its available resources to realize the rights in that covenant, one of which is the right to food. So the money's been allocated, and then it's been misappropriated. So the money was there, it was available, and they didn't use it to maximum effect. So that's just one example. And I love giving examples, so here's a couple more. People in the rural areas of Blossom County in Country C, again, stick in any other name you want, have to walk on average 15 miles to the nearest health clinic. No public transportation is available. As a result, a number of people, including pregnant women, die annually from a lack of medical care. And over the course of several years, the government has claimed that it has no resources. How many times do we hear that? No resources to build additional clinics. But during that time, the Army's budget has increased by 25%, even though there's no war going on. And here we're talking about the right to health. And again, we're talking here about when you have a covenant, international treaty, that says the government should use the maximum of its available resources to realize economic and social rights, that means they should be prioritizing economic and social rights. And clearly, when they're directing more money to the Army when they need it in the area of economic and social rights, they're not adequately prioritizing it according to their human rights obligations. Here's a different example. This is Agnes talking when she spoke about the obligation to protect us from the actions of third parties. Government has privatized water services in Country D. Again, privatization is a big issue generally. It has established a National Water Commission whose mandate is to oversee water contracts to ensure that services are being provided efficiently and that all citizens of Country D have access to clean water. Great. Great, great. Yeah. However, while the government lays out the process for the selection and work of the commission, it fails to allocate funds for its operations. The commission can't work. So on the one hand, it's taking actions to protect the right to water, and on the other hand, undercuts its own actions. So human rights budget work, which is what I'm involved in and a number of organizations are involved in, is essentially work. It does a couple different things. On the one hand, it can be using budget analysis, expenditure tracking, and other types of work on government budgets to advance different human rights. That's one way it's used. Another way that people do human rights budget work is they use the human rights framework, the legal framework, whether in their national constitution, regional treaties, international treaties, to help shape budgets so that budgets are more human rights compliant. That is about the right to education. What that is those are three cargo containers. Actually, also, there are three classrooms. And what they are three classrooms outside of a school in Buenos Aires, in Argentina. And the schools in the city suffer from overcrowding in the schools. So what the government has done, the local Ministry of Education, they have taken these cargo containers and made them into classrooms. And so the students go to school in these cargo containers, which you can see they have a window knocked in them, but you can imagine the ventilation and lighting is not that great. And it's a human rights issue. It's a right to education issue that has been worked on by the Asociación Civil por la Igualdad y la Justicia, ASIJ, in Argentina, the Civil Association for Equality and Justice. And why does it become a human rights issue? Because maybe the government can't do anything more than bring those cargo containers in. So why is it a human rights issue? The reason why is because ASIJ learned through its surveys with communities, with parents, teachers, and so on, that those cargo containers are put in next to certain schools to relieve overcrowding. And in other schools, additional classrooms are being built. And where do you think those cargo containers are going? We all know where those cargo containers are going. They're going to the poorer schools in the poorer neighborhoods. And so ASIJ found that out through a survey. And so what it did, and this is where the budget work came in, they looked at the national and international human rights guarantees in Argentina, and they used these. Argentina, the constitution guarantees equality and the right to education. Very strong. The city of Buenos Aires has its own constitution, which guarantees equality as well as access to early education for children from 45 days to 5 years. And that's what we're talking about, these cargo containers, these early childhood education. It's guaranteed, really, really good guarantees. And Argentina has ratified the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which guarantees the right to education. It guarantees that classrooms will be available in sufficient quantity and that classrooms will be acceptable quality. So, great protection. And here's the gap between the protection and the implementation. So ASIJ did was they thought, well, let's figure out what we're talking about. Because the government is doing this, it sort of seems discriminatory, but what can we propose as what needs to be done? So they went to the Ministry of Education's budget and they looked at the budget. And then they did some costing and they figured out from the budget how much it had cost the government to build an additional classroom. And then they looked at the cost of those cargo containers, and they learned that those cargo containers were being rented on an annual basis, and that the annual cost of renting one cargo container was more than the cost of building an additional classroom. And ASIJ is very smart. They are the best. So they packaged this information. We've heard a lot about information sharing and so on. They packaged this information, and they took it to the media. And it went all through the media in Buenos Aires. And I think I don't need to tell you what happened next. You can figure it out. It was great. It was really, really good. And so now there are more classrooms being built. So budget analysis as a tool to assist human rights work. Budget analysis, when I talk about budget work, what I mean is budget analysis, which is the traditional crunching the numbers. There's also something called expenditure tracking, which is basically The government can allocate a certain amount of money, but what they spend may be very different from what they allocate. So they may say, we're going to put $200 towards this, but in fact, they only spend 50, if that. And so it looks really good on paper, but then if you actually try to find out what happened, it's much less appealing looking. And so the expenditure tracking is to try to figure out how much the government actually spent and what they spent it on and the quality of the expenditures. So when I say budget work, I mean the budget analysis, the number crunching, the expenditure tracking, and there's a lot of organizations that are involved they involve communities in this expenditure tracking. So there's some very exciting stories that could be told about that. But the budget analysis or budget work helps assess the congruence of budget revenue, allocations, and expenditures with the government's human rights obligations. That's one thing that it does. It also helps cost out the implications of policy choices that are intended to advance human rights. So that's what Osage did. They thought, well, okay, how much does it cost to build a new classroom? How much do these cargo containers cost? And then they basically were trying to figure out the cost of these alternatives so that they could figure out if it was feasible to say to the government, you should be building new classrooms, not using these cargo containers. And of course, they found out that it was cheaper, so that basically that costing exercise helped them in their advocacy. It was really, really good. Budget analysis also helps identify sources of new or reprioritized funding to pay for human rights policy choices. So if you decide that the government should be doing this or that, building these new classrooms, what you can also do in the budget work is you can look at what the current allocations and expenditures are, and often there's not important. Some of the expenditures are not important. Thank you. Are not important, and you go and you frame your argument saying, and they say you don't have the resources. We say yes, you do. You're not prioritizing things correctly. So that's very useful for that. And it also enables groups to make very targeted recommendations to the government. Governments will often say, okay, you want us to advance the right to education. What should we be doing? Tell us what to do. And the budget work is very good in being able to say, you should build these new classrooms where there's proper ventilation, proper lighting, and so on, instead of bringing in these cargo containers. The challenges, I was asked to talk about the challenges in taking on human rights budget work. They're internal to organizations or coalitions, are knowing what human rights standards are and what they mean, such as what does the right to education mean, has to be available, accessible, and so on, because available is somewhere in the budget, accessible is somewhere in the budget, but what you need to know, available, accessible, you need to know what the guarantees are in the national constitutions and regional international treaties. You also understand how to read and analyze a government's budget. When I say you, I'm talking generic. I'm not talking one person. I'm not talking one organization. Some of the best budget work is being done in coalitions where you have really strong human rights knowledge maybe on the part of one organization and really strong budget work on the part of other organizations, and then a lot of discussion and a lot of back and forth to understand each other and to be able to really work together very, very constructively. And then the third challenge, and probably the most difficult, is translating human rights concepts into budget concepts and vice versa. So what we were saying earlier, what does availability look like in the budget? What does accessibility and the right to education look like in the budget? What does maximum available resources as an obligation look like in the budget? And similarly, if you're looking at a budget and you see over the course of, say, 5 years that expenditures on education are going down while the population is going up, how does that translate into a human rights issue? Translates into the obligation of progressive achievement. But there needs to be that translation process that goes on, which means conversations between human rights people and budget people so we know how to talk to each other and what each of us is saying. External to the organization, gaining access to government information and the inadequacy of information. Access to information is the single largest problem facing any group, whether they're doing human rights budget work or other civil society budget work. Access to information is every single country in the world is a problem in varying degrees. And then obviously enabling communities to understand budgets, if you're working with communities, what those budgets mean and how to influence them. And that's another whole conversation. And to close on that, from that point, I'm giving you here a video address. I found it on Google, the video, which was great. I had only seen it on a DVD before, but it's available, and really, it's so inspiring. It's a story of this organization in India, MKSS, which works with communities in Rajasthan. And what they did was they harassed the local government authorities for, like, we're talking weeks on end. Every day they showed up until the local government authorities released their financial accounts to them. And then they went, and then these financial accounts were, you know, 50 rupees this person this day for helping build this road, this amount of money for this well that was being dug. And then they went from village to find everybody that was listed on these accounts, and they asked everybody, did you get this money? No, I wasn't in town that day. I was in visiting my da-da-da. No, I never got it. And they did that, and in the process talked to everybody in the community about this, and then they had a big gathering where they invited the local government authorities and all these people that they had been talking to. And it's incredible video, so inspiring, particularly for nerds like us. Anyway, our program has put together a website on Human Rights Budget Works, so if you want to find out more about it, that website will give you some more information. Thanks very much.